Why Russia wants some countries to pay its oil and gas bills in Russian currency. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Berlin officials are calling on Germans to save energy amid a warning about disruptions to the supply of natural gas from Russia. About 40% of Germany's natural gas, used in factories and by homes to heat and cook, comes from Russia. And Moscow had been saying it could cut off supplies if Germany doesn't pay its gas bills using the Russian currency, the ruble. Now, this morning, there are some indications Russia is softening its stance on this, saying the ruble requirement could be phased in. Europe usually pays in euros, and switching to rubles could help boost the value of Russia's battered currency. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more.
Up until Russia invaded Ukraine, it was happy to receive euros as payment for natural gas. Jonathan Stern is a professor at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
This was a very useful way of getting foreign currency for buying all the things from the international market that it needed.
Russia's reserves of foreign currencies also served as a rainy day fund, says Sebastian Malaby, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. That's because it gave Russia the option to use its euros to buy rubles.
To drive up the value of the ruble in a crisis, which is what they're facing now.
The ruble's value tanked at the outset of Russia's invasion, but sanctions have prevented Russia from selling off its euros. Malaby says that's why Putin is retaliating, by demanding rubles in exchange for Russian natural gas.
Putin gets to make the customers of the gas switch from the euro into the ruble first, then pay Russia the rubles. And in that initial switch, they will be propping up the ruble, which is what Putin would like to do but can't.
The ruble's value has been recovering. Brendan McKenna is an economist with Wells Fargo. He says in part that's because Putin has restricted the amount of rubles that can leave the country.
And then you kind of add one more policy in place that's really centered around the lifeblood of Russia's economy, the energy sector. I really just think that's investors turning more positive on, you know, the future path for the ruble and driving the ruble recovery.
European nations don't want to prop up the ruble because keeping it weak puts pressure on the Russian economy. But Europe still relies on Russian natural gas for heat and electricity. Jason Bordoff is director of the Columbia Center on Global Energy Policy. He says that gives Russia a lot of leverage.
Either Europe pays in rubles in order to keep the lights on and the heat on, or Russia may get the excuse it could potentially be looking for to cut off energy supplies to Europe in a worst-case scenario.
On the other hand, Bordoff says that wouldn't be great for Russia either, since cutting off energy supplies to Europe would cut off one supply of revenue to Russia. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
The United Nations is warning that the world could be headed for the worst food crisis since World War II, given Russia's war on Ukraine. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here with more on that.
The UN is pointing to Yemen right now, David, as a concrete example of the ripple effects from the Ukraine war. Yemen is embroiled in a civil war, has been for years. The UN says it's had to cut food rations there by 50%. And it may be unable to deliver food aid altogether. And that's a direct result of what's happening with the availability of crucial staples from Ukraine and from Russia. We've talked about this before. Wheat, corn, sunflower oil. Russia and Ukraine provide a lot of the world supply. Prices have been going up. The UN is paying higher prices too. And the World Food Program is having to make do with less food available to distribute.
I was looking at this. There are longer term concerns as well.
Right. The many Ukrainian farmers that would be planting right now for future harvests are off fighting in the war, so future supply is in danger. The UN is worried about a number of African and Middle Eastern countries that could face food instability and potentially massive migration because they depend so much on Ukraine's exports. For the time being, Russia has claimed there are humanitarian corridors to move cargo ships out, but the US says that's not happening. Dozens of ships are stuck. And in fact, the US is accusing Russia of bombing at least three cargo ships, David.
All right, Nova Safo, thank you very much. S&P futures are down 0.4%. The key stock index in Germany, the DAX, is down 1.4%, but London is steady. Crude oil using the New York price is up 1.8% now, 106 a barrel. And here's another set of numbers. 10% of the world's energy supply now comes from wind and solar. That is a record high, according to an independent climate think tank called Ember. The biggest shifts into renewables are happening in the Netherlands, Vietnam, and Australia. The overall champ, Denmark, 52%. A lot of that offshore wind. Thank you. California has become the first state to create a task force to look at paying reparations to black people. There's no plan on the table yet, but this could include scholarships, housing assistance, or cash. Yesterday, the task force voted to make eligibility based on family lineage. Marketplace's Matt Levin has more.
The debate both inside and beyond the California task force is whether reparations should be limited to those who can prove they are direct descendants of enslaved people. That approach leaves out a wide swath of black Americans hurt by systemic racism, says Ron Daniels of the National African American Reparations Commission.
Shirley Chisholm or Harry Belafonte, the banana boat man, they would all be excluded.
And Daniels says it may be difficult or impossible to prove someone's ancestors were enslaved. But supporters of more targeted reparations say that strategy avoids potential legal problems. California's approach to reparations eligibility matters, says Rayshon Ray at the Brookings Institution.
I think myself, along with others, expect for this particular commission to set the tone for what is going to happen in other states.
The task force is due to release its final recommendations next year. Then it's up to the California legislature to decide whether to make them law. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
And the Federal Trade Commission is suing Intuit, saying its tax preparation software too often costs money, despite the word free used in Intuit advertising. Free only for some, is the FTC's view. Many users find out it's not free after they've entered a bunch of personal information into the system. Intuit says they have worked to increase the number of TurboTax users eligible for free. The company plans to fight the lawsuit vigorously, they say. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.